colorado.gov/library.
KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver. Stay tuned for Metro.
Support comes from the Boulder County Fair Livestock Show and Rodeo, taking place August 6th through the 10th, presenting 5 days of activities at the Boulder County Fairgrounds in Longmont. Live music, grandstand events, and a carnival. Detailed information can be found at bouldercountyfair.org.
This is Denverse on Metro on KGNU, and I'm your host, Anthony Elio. Denverse Magazine is an arts and culture publication launched in the summer of 2024 that features writers, illustrators, musicians, and comedians from around the city. The magazine also comes with an AI-free guarantee, meaning that its staff works to ensure that all editorial content is generated by actual people in the community, not AI tools. The summer issue of Denverse Magazine is available now, so I spoke to some of the unique Denver personalities featured in the latest edition. Sammy Anzer is a multiracial comedian who has been featured on Kevin Hart's LOL Network, PBS, Funny or Die, and writes sharp personal comedy from Queens to Denver.
Starting out, how long have you been doing comedy in Denver?
Whoa, 8 years. Yeah, so I get to learn the city pretty well. I know the whole city based on what gigs I've done where. Like, I don't know cross streets or anything like that, but I will be like, oh yeah, I did a show for like four drunk people right over there. Some crazy wacky interns.
what were those little shows like? The like early on shows, you know, doing them for four drunk people. And
man, it's like a movie scene. It's like one of those things, like you look back on it and you're like, you're so bad, but you're so earnestly trying that you're happy to do anything anywhere. And you're like doing an impression of a comedian almost. And you'll go to like any bar or brewery that will have you. Yeah, it just kind of evolved. So I think thinking about it is kind of cool because I'm like, oh yeah, I did used to do that. And now I'm just like, you know, walking into places, sneaking on shows and like, you know, flying out and stuff like that. So it is cool to think about that.
Well, it's that time that you're like honing your craft and whatnot. Like, would you even, if you went back 8 years and saw like the first set that you did out here, would it be recognizable compared to your current style?
There'd be glimpses of it, but no, it was bad, which is, I think it's so important to talk about how bad you can be when you first start, because I think that comedy, like magic or like music, like people just think that you're good at it. They see you and they go, oh my God, look how they just do it. But really, it's a ton of practice and it's a ton of effort over time, and you could do it too.
When comedy's interesting because, you know, compared to so many other art forms, if you knew someone that was an oil painter, you couldn't just be like, hey, make me a quick oil painting.
Yeah.
When you're a comedian, I'm sure you run into this so many times where people like want you to do a bit for them or want you to just like expect you to be,
I would never
just do something funny on the spot.
I would never. I've done this long enough where I don't feel the need to like feed into people's expectations. Like sometimes people will go like, oh, are you like, I'll be like, you know, if I do decide to tell someone, I'm like, yeah, I'm a comedian. And like, oh yeah, are you funny? Do something funny. I just go, no. Because that's such a crazy request to make of someone. And it's like, you know, you're a lawyer. It's like, hey, can you take a look at this and show me that you know law? Would you do this copyright for me very quickly? Like, it's a wild request. And I think when someone does that, it's strange. I hope I'm not being too much here, but when someone does that to me, it shows that they don't have any like empathy for like the idea of like being in someone else's shoe, that they just see me as like an abstract concept. Like, ooh, just a funny man came into the town and now he's here. And now I could ask him all types of to do things.
I think those are the same people that are rude to like people in the service industry. They don't know how to, you're right, like empathize with people or put themselves in other people's shoes. Because yeah, that would be super bizarre with any other, except maybe a kickboxer. If I met a kickboxer, I'd be like, I would want to see a kick or two.
Yeah,
that might be the only
one. Is that what you're into? Like a kick?
No, I just think it'd be interesting. Yeah, when's the last time you met a kickboxer?
Yeah,
I just think that would be fascinating
to see an actual live kick, and you're like, do it on me.
Yes, yeah. I'm just like, hey, I got health insurance. Just play it on me.
One shin kick, really quick.
One quick one,
Yeah, because then people just see you as an idea. It's the equivalent of like, I feel like that's the same person who, when they see a famous person at the urinal, they're like, can I take your picture? It's like, you're not even seeing this person as a person. You're just seeing them as whatever your idea of them is, an opportunity to make you laugh or something like that.
Which is, I'm sure you've maybe seen it get worse over time, because I feel like I've heard more and more about how socially our culture is getting worse and worse, and like less and less able to, read the room or be able to, I'm sure you've seen that get worse over time.
I think people often contributed to like a post-pandemic thing, that people just like looked at their phones too much and then just like got anxiety from interacting with people. And then they're like, oh, I don't get anxiety when I'm like looking at my phone and pressing the like button, so I'll do that instead. So I think that there is like a trend of that, but like, I get it. I know what it's like to be like, feel weird in weird situations. I'm not. Sometimes you're weird.
Yeah.
Sometimes you meet weird people.
And speaking of being weird, that was the whole...
Right?
Man, talk about a transition.
Right?
I feel like Pee Wee Herman. Like, you said the word of the day.
Boing, 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 boing.
This is where we could really use those sound effects.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Speaking of weird, I really enjoyed your piece for the summer issue, which was all about these spaces where you can feel weird.
Yeah.
And where did that come from?
I think it came from the idea of like, you want to feel like you could be yourself, and you want to be in places where you could feel like you could be yourself. And I talk about this in the article, where it's like, you don't want to feel like you're always going against the grain. Sometimes it's kind of exhausting, where like, I used to live in Memphis, and if I ordered a salad there, they'd be like, what you doing ordering a salad, right? But then like, if I was in Boulder and I look and I'm like dressed the way I am, like I stick out like a sore thumb. And I wanted to feel like comfortable. And I think we all kind of do, where it's easy to be yourself. And I found these places in Denver where I'm like, okay, I'm definitely not going to, what's that awful bar in Lodo? View House.
You have to be much more specific.
View House, right? I don't know. We don't have any obligations to them. But yeah,
they're our sponsor for this episode, actually.
Yeah. Well, not anymore. They're not. Yeah, just like, awful bro bars or something like that. I'm like, why am I here? Why am I going to this nightclub? Why am I going to this place where I have to like feel uncomfortable? And I'm like, where do I go that I feel good? Where do I go where I feel like people who don't fit in go? And those are some of the places.
I think you even brought up too, it was a mix of that where you said, going to those kind of bars and you see people getting their drunk scooter crashes, and then those big pieces of art that everyone's taking like selfies with, kind of thing. And what's interesting is like, that all seems weird in a certain way. That seems like something like, I wouldn't want to do that.
But now that's our cultural norm, right?
Yeah.
It's put the football game on super loud, chug a beer, try to talk to some woman who's like taking a picture of her and her friends and she wants to ignore you, and then some loud music you don't like or care for. It's like, why are we all like, why am I participating in this anymore if I don't like it?
Yeah. And so you wanted to find or like focus on spaces that you felt open, like just being yourself in, being, and so what was the first spot of the ones you listed that you just really noticed?
Mutiny. I love Mutiny. Have you been there? They're in Englewood now. I love Mutiny. I mean, like for me, I talk about how it like reminds me of like a New York City bookstore. When you're in a New York City bookstore, everyone's looking at their own thing. There's like a librarian looking lady next to a guy with like a 2-foot mohawk and dressed in metal. And then there's all types, every type of person, and everyone likes what they like, and no one cares, and everyone's just doing their own thing. And that was the vibe when I got in with Mutiny. There were people who were playing like Dungeons and Dragons, old dudes playing chess, young kids like trying to listen to music off the street, comic book nerds. And then there was performances. Have you been to comedy shows or like music shows at Mutiny?
No, but I know they just started doing it where they do like a really good mix of, yeah, like comedy and kind of really great local musicians been playing there.
Yeah. And that's the vibe I like, where like everyone can just be what they want to be in that space. Like life is, you come to that realization where it's like, you know, sometimes between, hopefully between high school and adulthood, you realize, oh, wait, I don't give a fuck what people think. I'm going to like what I like. And I'm not going to shame someone for liking something else they like.
Right. And that's such an important part of, I don't know, quote unquote, growing up or whatever, is just being like, yeah, like not judging others for that. And just being like, this is a space I can really like enjoy myself. And like, I don't know, Mutiny does a very good job of that. Because like the second you walk into the door, it's not like, hey, what are you looking for? You know, what are you browsing? What are you doing?
No customer service there. Hello, what can we help you with today?
Right. It's just like, hey, go check out what we have to offer. And what they have to offer is awesome. I was there about a month ago, I'm going to say, just picking up some comics from a local comic artist, nice. Justin Renteria, who does such cool work. He did the cover to the summer issue with the ants and whatnot.
Oh, sick. Yeah. They were talking about him at Mutiny when they were talking about the front with the issue where I picked it up there.
No kidding. Dude, like, he does such great work. If you get a chance, I highly recommend check out his comic book series. That Rufus Carl is One Bad Hombre. It is like an 80s movie mixed with fast food. Like, fast food corporations are like the like gangsters. Like, it's such a unique like world cool. that he set up. Like,
that's weird.
Highly recommend it. It's super weird.
See, that's
weird.
What I'm saying. It's weird.
Yeah. And like, I was so much happier with that than getting like, I don't know, some mainstream kind of comic that was there.
I think we all like weird stuff and we all want to see like the weirdness. We just sometimes act normal.
Yeah. I think that you start to get that sense when you're a kid almost of like, this is quote unquote weird. You know, this isn't what everyone else is doing. And I feel like everyone has that from when they were a kid, that moment of, oh, I didn't realize what I was doing was weird. Do you like remember yours, or we're really getting into like psychiatry talk now?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've been thinking about like, at least when I was in high school, like it wasn't socially acceptable to like anime. So I used to like anime in private. That wasn't a thing that urban youth could like. You know, you had to like being a thug. You had to like being gangster, being tough. And then I would go home and like watch Dragon Ball Z and like try to do the fusion dance with my friends. And that's when that's when I realized that like liking what I like outwardly could have some benefits. And I mean, have some, the opposite of benefits, like bad things in my life. Women might think I'm dorky. Guys might try to see me as like a target or something like that. So you learn to kind of like push it all in. And then eventually, hopefully, you learn to forget that and push it all out and be like, I like this. I talk like this. I do this. I don't care.
Yeah. Which it's funny that there's that the worst like age to try to fully be yourself. Like you're really, really finding yourself out. Those teenage years are so tough because, yeah, you do have to hide so many of the things that you actually enjoy because you're like, well, I want to seem cool and I want to get dates and I want to, which sucks because
being
that's
cool
when
is lame.
Yes.
It's so lame. If you think about it, like as an adult, like we used to have this idea of like a cool guy in your mind, right? I don't know, maybe leather jacket, a cool car or whatever, something like that. He's like blasé. And like now if you see that guy as like a full formed adult, you're like, that is boring. What are you doing? You're just being a cool guy. That's your whole thing.
Denver's on Metro is produced with support from Global Arts Press, publisher of The Future Lies, a novel by John B. Lane. What would you do if you found out one day that the artificial intelligence that ran everything was lazy, dishonest, and not quite as bright as it seemed? The Future Lies is a post-dystopian romantic thriller that sets a group of friends against the power of the network. Learn more at globalartspress.com. And from The Corner Beat, Capitol Hill's neighborhood juicery and vegetarian cafe. With an eclectic bohemian vibe and a fine dining standard, The Corner Beat offers quality ingredients and focuses on fresh, local, and organic ingredients. This vegetarian cafe has a specially formulated menu with plenty of add-in sub-out options to accommodate all dietary needs, including vegan, gluten-free, and soy-free in some cases. Learn more at cornerbeat.com. And from Pit Fiend Barbecue. Pit Fiend serves USDA prime beef brisket from Creekstone Farms, the same briskets cooked and served at Franklin Barbecue in Austin, Texas. Pit Fiend's experts learn their craft at Owlbear Barbecue from a seasoned Texas pitmaster and employ many of the same techniques from Austin's top BBQ joints when smoking their brisket. Learn more at pitfiendbbq.com. Levi Jansen is a local video producer who enjoys creating photos in his spare moments. You can see more of his work at levijansen.com.
I find that photo essays are such a interesting art form. Have you done many in the past?
You know, honestly, this is my first attempt at a photo essay. I'm a video producer by trade. So, you know, storytelling through visuals is, I'm no stranger to that. I understand how that works, how you have to build a narrative through visuals. Of course, you have the added benefit in video of having some audio component as well to help tell that story. So I think having that stripped out and having to create a context without any sort of explanation, audio explanation, was kind of the challenge of working on this piece, and is what made it kind of fun. Like, I thought back to, you know, my film school days, and, you know, this idea of montage as it, you know, was truly formed, you know, by Sergei Eisenstein, which is this idea of, like, not so much how we think of it with, like, a Rocky movie where he's different shots of him training and it builds excitement, but more this idea of taking different images and putting them next to each other and having them create a meaning that individually they didn't have. So that's kind of what I was working with when I tried to put the essay together.
The way that it was framed with, you know, antennas are both a sign of communication and kind of a sign of yearning. And that really comes through with that piece. Was that kind of intentional with starting this piece?
Honestly, no. I think, you know, I moved to the suburbs however many years ago it's been. I lived in Denver since 2007, moved out there 10 years later. And, you know, the city expands as you drive out of it. And so things like cell towers, steeples, you know, flagpoles, they start to stand on their own outside of the environment that they are in Denver, for instance. So you start to notice them. I became obsessed with cell towers probably about 2 years ago. And it really started instantly enough where I'm just driving to work commuting and I see one and I'm like, what is that monstrosity? Did that just go up this week? Like, I never noticed it before. And then I started seeing them everywhere. And I started seeing these panels that, you know, that form these cell towers also being bolted onto buildings and all these different places, like how deeply integrated this technology was into the fabric of our city. And yet I had not noticed it prior to that day, whenever that was. I mean, of course I noticed it somewhat, but like, I didn't think about it. So I kind of went a little crazy and like, I wouldn't say I was being conspiratorial, but I was like, is this all happening at once? Like, when are they putting these things up? And then ultimately through Google Maps, I was going back, you know, 5-10 years to these locations where I saw these things and noticed that they've always been there, which I thought, oh, that's even more interesting that they evaded my attention for so many years. And now I see them everywhere. And I have to feel like other people probably feel the same way, like probably having a similar experience where they don't see these things. And then one day you do, and then you can't unsee them. And then I became enamored with them at that point, not so much offended, but more like, wow, these are, I mean, monstrosity is, you know, obviously it has bad connotations, but in a sense, it's also compelling. You know, it's got these panels, and these wires and these spikes, and, you know, not everything looks to have a purpose on it even, you know, it's like, there's like extra stuff on there that just like, why does that need to be there? And it starts to take on almost like a sculpture form, and they're all individual. They all look completely different. And that's the other thing that I think is interesting about them is that you would think, you know, cell towers, as we understood them in the past, those antennas that were basically, you know, the iron structures that, you know, go up 300 feet or whatever, very impressive, but they're all very similar looking. And we've seen them, you know, going back to the 80s or whatever, probably longer. But these new ones, this new form is, very different because it has the flat panels on it and every one of them is different. And so, you know, I don't know why that is, but you start to look at them and they have different characters to them. They're different colors. You notice like one of the ones I featured is painted black. And that's why it originally stuck out to me. I was like, why would they paint this thing black? It's so menacing just up there in the sky. You're like, it's almost like you're being taunted by whomever placed this thing. And so I started photographing it and trying to see in different light, you know, can I make it look beautiful? Can I make it look scary? And then did some research on that location in Google Maps and realized the reason it was painted black is because there used to be a tree there and it blended in, cut the tree down. And then now there's just this menacing cell tower there for everyone to see or not.
It's extremely depressing to know the background of it now, you know, because yeah, it is so menacing. And that was what really stood out to me was this, you know, beautiful blue Colorado sky. And then just kind of these man-made towers, these man-made antennas that just kind of like muddied up the skies a little bit when you were just trying to, you know, to look at the natural beauty of our state.
Absolutely. I think that's certainly one way to look at it. And I think probably the popular view to see them that way. But, you know, I've tried to force myself to see them in a different way. And the juxtaposition of them on that blue sky, especially when you decontextualize them from their surroundings, you know, and you'll see on some of those photos, that's exactly what I did. You know, I purposely shot them from a fairly low angle so you don't see the environment in which they live or where they're installed, but just them in the sky and the environment. And I find those photos to be very sympathetic to these things. They're almost like creatures at that point. And they can have different moods. You know, they can look scary and menacing, especially if, you know, the sky behind them is stormy or, you know, the light is silhouetting it. Or they can look kind of soft and sort of lost, you know, if you know, you're shooting them at dusk or in dawn, you know, in the softer light. You know, it's kind of, you can kind of choose how to see them at that point. But then when you bring them back into the environment, you know, and I include a few photos of these actually in the environment. And it becomes a little bit more complicated at that point because you're like, okay, we do have to live with these things. They're necessary for our communication. You know, I mean, in some ways they're necessary for survival. You know, I mean, you need to reach out and call 911 because you have an emergency. You have to do it through one of these towers now. People don't have landlines typically. You know, it's really the whole exercise of all of these, and we haven't gotten to the steeples or the flags yet, but it's to take these things that, you know, people are inclined to view in one way and trying to photograph them in a way that shows them in a different light and then put them together to tell a story. And then that was, yeah, kind of the overall, the idea behind the essay. And then, you know, I think there's a couple other ideas that I baked in as well, but.
Yeah. And because I believe this is the very first photo essay we featured in Denver's magazine, and it fit really well because it's, you know, it still told a story in a very subtle way and in a very beautiful way too, you know, just, I loved how everything was shot from one picture to another.
Yeah. And they said that's very purposeful. I think when I started to photograph these different symbols, we'll call them, I guess, you know, I had this intention of like, okay, you know, as a photographer, you can really choose how your subject looks and how you present them. You can do it favorably, unfavorably. And I wanted to do it both in the effort to make it almost neutral to where, like, you know, the audience is going to bring their own baggage to those photos and decide for themselves somewhat how they feel about them. And, you know, in picking symbols like the American flag, the steeples, which frankly, I didn't necessarily land on because I wanted such evocative images, but more of like, they're just similar to the cell towers, you know? So as I'm traveling through the city and I'm looking up, what else am I seeing? I'm seeing American flags and I'm seeing steeples. And I started to be interested in how they look in different light and how they look laid across the Colorado sky. And so I just naturally started taking photos of them as well. And then, so I ended up with a bunch of photos of these symbols, and then how do you fit them together? How do you tell a story with them? And really when that truly came together for me was when I stumbled across the steeples that had the antennas bolted onto them, because that's a convergence now. You know, I think we take this idea of, as you said earlier, yearning, you know, and people, you know, can look at a steeple and you're trying to speak to God symbolically, you know, through that steeple. You know, you look at the American flag and you're trying to understand your place in this country through that, to that flag. You know, how can you communicate to, I mean, obviously you're not going to try to talk to your senator through the flag, but like you do look at that as a symbol and try to create some sort of meaning of your place within this country through looking at that symbol. And through the cell towers, you know, it's a little bit different, I think, but I think when people look at those, they understand immediately, okay, that is commerce, that is communication. And so you just take these different symbols, both literal and symbols that are literal and also symbolic, and you sort of throw them in together and once again juxtapose them, and then that's where you try to create the different meaning of, you know, how we navigate these different artifacts that are in our landscape. And then at the end, you know, we've literally actually combined them. You know, now there's cell phone antenna panels grafted onto steeples. So these steeples are not only just symbolic transmitters to God, but they are also literal transmitters to the world at the same time, which is really interesting. And, you know, I don't necessarily care about the economic or political, or, you know, obviously it's a form of capitalism that, you know, these churches have chose to, I'm assuming, be contracted to host these antennas for the cell phone companies. I don't know for sure. I haven't done any research on that, but I'm not so much interested in what that means. It's more about like, oh, wow, we have taken the symbolic, the spiritual, and we've now made it quite, quite physical and literal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, in addition to this piece, I checked out some of the rest of your photography on your website too. And while I know like your background's mostly videography, how would you describe your approach to photography and your photographic style?
I think that, you know, you won't find a lot of people in my photos, and it's not that I'm not interested in people, but I think that I enjoy photography because it allows me a sense of solitude. And so wandering on the streets, driving in my car by myself, looking at these spaces and trying to find moments devoid of people is kind of, you know, it's comforting to me. I'm an introverted person by nature. So I think that is kind of the foundation of my work, in a sense of like, I'm trying to find vacant spaces that I can somewhat sit with and contemplate and then capture or photographically. And then in terms of what I'm interested in, you know, it kind of, you know, it varies to quite a bit. You know, I do love going up in the mountains and hiking. There are some elements of landscape photography in my portfolio. I think I spend the most of my time, you know, in the suburbs, frankly, you know, because that's where I live. And so I'm kind of challenged with this circumstance where, you know, where I live is not traditionally considered to be interesting in any sort of way at all. And so, but it's where I spend all of my time. You know, I have a toddler at home. I can't be away from my family for hours a day, you know, up in the mountains or going through the city trying to find interesting subject matter. So I have to take what's around me, my commute to and from work, my neighborhood, local boulevard streets and things like that, and see how I can look at it and make it interesting to me. I don't know if it's interesting to anybody else. Who knows? But I think for me, it's a fun exercise to look at something as simple as like this balloon that is advertising a new condominium complex. And, you know, I immediately am enraptured by this thing. And my wife's with me in the car and I'm like, I want to pull over and shoot this. And she's like, what's going on? I don't understand. Like, and so I, you know, actually end up going back at a time when I knew the light would be better and hunted this thing down and waited for it to be, you know, perfectly vertical and still. Cause I feel like that's, to me, in my ideal mind, I was like, that is really arresting and unsettling, this balloon that clearly isn't moving. That's kind of how I approach it, I guess. I kind of create my own little narratives in my head around these different places and subjects, and then try to communicate them through the photography. I don't know if I'm successful ever, but that's what makes me excited about it.
Public lands are under pressure. From proposed sell-offs to rollbacks on environmental protections, what's at stake, and how are communities fighting back? Join us for Public Lands, Public Voices, a regional call-in show from Rocky Mountain Community Radio. That's Thursday, July 31st, from 6 to 7 p.m., here on KGNU. Your voice matters. Be part of the conversation.
Welcome to the Regional Roundup, a production of Rocky Mountain Community Radio, a coalition of public and community radio stations in Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and New Mexico, including this one. I'm Maeve Conran, the coalition's managing editor, and on today's show, we'll hear how one Wyoming family is preparing for a quinceañera.
And I really just want to, like, have no regrets.
The reality of being a camp host in the Rocky Mountains.
It is basically the highlight of my life at the moment.
A historic kayak trip down the full length of the Klamath River was undertaken recently by Indigenous youth, supported by a Colorado nonprofit.
And I learned about the history and what my ancestors and people before me have went through for these dams to finally come out.
The Arkansas River brings flocks of people to its shores every summer as it runs through Salida.
I enjoy floating down the river with my friends and tubing.
And we remember the late poet laureate of Colorado.
I was tough in the husk, went years untouched by rain, took shelter seriously.
From Rocky Mountain Community Radio, it's